this evening, having done our review after 10 months of study in the book of Isaiah, we are going to remain in the same general time frame and take up the book of Amos after tonight's introduction. So for the first at least 15 or 20 minutes of the class, we'll be looking through some charts here, and then, as I mentioned before the class, we'll be starting in on 2 Chronicles chapter 26. As I would like this evening to spend the bulk of our time simply going through the Chronicles account, 2 Chronicles 26 through 32, that account of the entire time frame of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. And so as you look at the chart here, this is really not the book of Amos tonight. It is an introduction to the book of Amos, and it begins... I can get the slide to change. Why it's not moving. There we go. With a test. Okay. So, I want to look tonight at general information about minor prophets. So, right off the bat, what then is a major prophet? Somebody tell me what's a major prophet. Okay? Bill? That is sort of right. No, he's absolutely right. It's correct. That's the way we always put it. We know that the difference between a major prophet and a minor prophet is the size of the book. But you always have to put some sort of caveat at the end of that statement. Is it always just the size of the book? Not really, because if a major prophet is just the size of the book, then what must a minor prophet be? Well, if you would think a smaller book. But that's not always the case by any means. So let me ask you this way. How many major prophets are there?
Three.
Totally a trick question. Even father and son can't get it right. You can tell they're from the same family, because instead of answering, both Cal and Ken held up fingers. But I get four from one and five from the other. So in this case, unlike father, like son, I guess, or such like that. And yet, of course, they're both right. It was a trick question. Both answers are kind of correct. And so what I'm saying is, how many major prophets' books are there? Major prophets' books is five. But how many major prophets are there? Four. Somebody can tell me who they are? Isaiah,
Jeremiah,
Ezekiel, and Daniel. They are the four men. But there's a fifth book. What's the fifth book?
Lamentations.
Lamentations was written by which of the four men?
Jeremiah.
So you say, Jeremiah and Lamentations, and we think of them, they're next door to each other, you know, in the Bible order, as being major prophets' books. But what about Lamentations compared to some, several of the minor prophets? Smaller. It's a tiny little book. So we call it a major prophet, and it's in the middle of the major prophets, because Jeremiah, who wrote a giant book, also, you know, wrote Lamentations as well. It's only got four chapters. And so then, even with Daniel, are there minor prophets whose books are bigger than Daniel? Yes. Is it a very accurate terminology to even speak of major and minor prophets? It's really not. I'm not even sure I know how it got started, but that's the universal way we view it. So depending on who you ask, they'll both be right. How many major prophets are there? If they say four, they mean the number of men. If they say five, they mean the books. And then we know that already we've got contradiction in our definition. It really does not add up. So, how many minor prophets' books are there? Minor prophets. I'll give you a clue. Now, if you don't get this, you know, it's the same number as the apostles.
Twelve.
Oh, good. See, I was hoping I could trick you, because there is Paul out there, you know, and Matthias, for that matter. But it is 12. There are 12 books that are called minor prophets. Do we have in that group, like we did with the major prophets, do we have more than one book written by an individual minor prophet?
Yes.
No, we don't. So there's 12 minor prophets and there's 12 minor prophets' books. So there's 4 major prophets and there's 5 major prophets' books. And some of the minor prophets' books are bigger than the major prophets' books, and some of the major prophets' books smaller than the minor, you know, and so you may just get a quagmire right there. But that's the terminology. You know, that's the way that it's always worked. Number 6, what is a literary prophet? A literary prophet is a prophet who wrote a book. What then is an oral prophet? An oral prophet, is any less of a prophet than a literary prophet? Is the work any less valuable? No. What did he not do? He didn't write it down. The literary prophet writes his prophecies down. They're preserved as God selects them to be preserved. The oral prophet's books were not preserved. That's God's sovereign decision, which means we didn't need them. They were more local, or else they were more specific to a given time frame, whatever their missions were. Quite a few of them are named by Bible books, but we don't have a separate book by them. So when you just say prophet, right off the bat, you're talking about a really big topic. At its fundamental core, what is the definition of a prophet? In fact, if you were to try to go really precisely, as if you were going to translate the word prophet, what would it mean? Okay, now that's correct, but that's step 2, and I was trying to get at step 1. Okay, what it generally means is to bubble up, to surge forth. The idea behind the word is that you have like a hose with water issuing forth, or like a fountain in the ground bubbling up. You've got a source and or a conduit, and out of the end is coming, we would think, water or something else. But in this case, second level, what's coming out? The word of God. A prophet is a mouth or mouthpiece for God. When the prophets speak under inspiration, were they 100% of the time under inspiration? No, were the apostles 100% of the time under inspiration? What does it mean to be under inspiration? If you are inspired, then what? The very word means God breathed. Inspired, when translated, means God breathed. It means that the words and then the air and the syllables and the words that they form, you know, are originating in God. So anybody who is a spokesperson for God and is under the influence of the Holy Spirit is said to be inspired and becomes a prophet. Are all the apostles prophets? Sure they were. Are all the prophets apostles? No. And so, not all the prophets are literary. You know, you have different callings, different functions for each of them. So we're not going to spend much more time on that. I may need some more time on that. But just so that we understand, is a prophet, by definition, one that foretells the future? By definition, which we've just gone through, must a prophet, to be a prophet, be foretelling the future? No. There has often been said, I don't know who originated this phrase either, but it's often been said that a prophet is a foreteller, but not necessarily a foreteller. What issues forth from the prophet is the word of God. Could that prophet say something that is very contemporary and has got anything to do with what's going to happen next week or next century? Sure they could. They do it all the time. Now, I don't know what the percentages are. That would take a lot of work. You know, I'm going to read all these 17 books of prophecy to, you know, try to sort out what the percentages are. I really don't know. But it is a fundamental error to think that a prophet foretells the future. That is not necessarily required at all. What they are is a mouthpiece or a spokesperson for God. Okay, and so, as you've seen in these seven questions, we've got a lot of information about prophets. So let me just hit you real quick. You know, is Ezekiel a major prophet or a minor prophet? He's a major prophet. Is Hosea major or minor? Which book is bigger, Lamentations or Hosea?
Hosea
by a lot. He's a minor prophet. Who knows why? You know, because it doesn't always add up. Now if I say, I clear my voice, a him, what do I mean? Okay, just mean by hearing aids, but it seems like you're not only faster with that answer, but you're getting louder too. You get enthusiastic when stuff really starts to stick. And that's part of the reason I picked Amos for this next class, is I wanted us to stick in the same time frame too. We've been massaging this time frame throughout Isaiah 66 chapters. Thanks to Ted, and I truly appreciate it, teaching Micah, we've got four of the men that are in this particular time frame. And, two of the four have been covered, and now we're going to look at the third, which is Amos. I thought I saw somebody hand up a moment ago. Here it is.
Does this mean
when
we're going to Amos, we're going to study Hosea and Micah?
We would certainly not study Micah. Ted did great on that. Whether or not we'll go to Hosea is unbeknownst to me. Yes, I haven't thought through yet whether I really feel like we want to do that. I think my first inclination would be no to Hosea. Because, as we'll see in a little bit, Amos and Hosea's time frame is also identical. And while Hosea certainly has much to say that is utterly unique to Hosea, it is a big book, but it also, you know, is extremely, you know, contemporary with Isaiah. And so there's going to be some overlap there, and I'm thinking maybe we might be satisfied with 3 out of 4. But if there is, you know, if the word Hosea is burned into my grasp, I might reconsider. You guys start flinging gasoline into my fire. We might think about it, but at this point I'm kind of leaning a little bit away from that, but we shall see. So earlier you saw this chart with Isaiah. You've seen it several times with Isaiah. I saw it again last week in our review of Isaiah. I want to change it just a tiny bit. When I introduced Isaiah, I used these dates, 765 to 695 B.C., which would be a total spread of how many years? It's always fun to play that game in the B.C.s and all that. But it would be 70 years. And so what I said at that time is the farthest out, which would be the earliest that we could imagine Amos might have started preaching, down to the latest that Micah or Isaiah may have been preaching, then we would have 765 to 695 as a spread. But we don't know when they started. We don't know when they ended. But I'd like to add, after some further reading and study in preparation for this class, I was able to find an even bigger spread. So the biggest one I could find out, and I found one just before I left it after I made this chart. This is 791 to 686. You know, it would be the biggest spread, and that'd be 105 years. And so, you know, somewhere in the midst of the century, you've got four men, and they're going to be overlapping in this manner. Amos chapter 1 and verse 1 says, "The words of Amos, who was among the sheepherders from Tekoa, which he envisioned concerning Israel in the days of whom?"
Uzziah.
Now, Uzziah's got two names. He's also Azariah, but Uzziah, king of Judah. How many kings are mentioned with regard to Amos? One. Uzziah, king of Judah. But as we saw so long ago, 10 months ago, with Isaiah 1:1, this is the vision of Isaiah, son of Amos, concerning Judah and Jerusalem, which he saw during the reigns of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. Note that there is no reference to the kings of Israel. Some of them will have references to kings of Israel, and I just chopped them up for the sake of, you know, the chart right here. But where Amos only mentions Uzziah and Isaiah mentions four, they are in Isaiah's first verse in chronological order. So Uzziah, his son, then his grandson, and then Hezekiah. And so you've got four kings that it's impossible to date. We know the general time frame. We have no idea when any one of them started to preach very precisely, nor do we know when they ended very precisely. We can't name the kings precisely, and therefore we can't name the prophets precisely either. So there's just this tremendous amount of play, anywhere from what might be as little as 50 years to perhaps as much as 104 years is a pretty big spread. So Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah will be the subject of essentially our whole class here this evening. Hosea chapter 1 and verse 1 says, "The word of the Lord which came to Hosea the son of Beeri during the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, king of Judah." So exactly the same. So the two that are the most similar in their length of time, at least are covering all four kings, are Isaiah and Hosea, as I mentioned a little while ago. Finally, we have Micah. Micah says in the first verse, "The word of the Lord which came to Micah of Moresheth in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah." So he did not preach during the reign of Uzziah, the first of these four kings, and Amos only preached during that reign. But Micah did span three reigns, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. And as you'll discover, save for Amos, we have no idea how long he preached. There's only one king, though. These other three, Isaiah, Hosea, Micah, spanning four or three kings, even with the three of Micah, it is a big spread. Now, I introduced, I believe, this chart to you last week. You can find this in Erdman's Bible Handbook. They've got several others that are very similar to this. It's just an outstanding set of charts in that particular publication. Up above, you have here the Assyrian Empire at 800 BC, stretching up to this slight line you can see right there, but about 620 BC, Babylon moves in, wipes out Assyria, takes over as the big superpower of the Gentile nation. This is showing you the center area, just the last years, and then the destruction and captivity of the northern 10 tribes, Israel, as they're taken into captivity to Assyria. Down below, you have Judah, and then in three different invasions, Nebuchadnezzar is going to take them into Babylonian, not Assyrian, captivity. So you see you've got three lines right here that show that a certain percentage of the nation was killed or taken captive three different times right there. And then what we're going to do is just zoom in right here. I had four levels of this last week, and we're just going to look at one right here. So we're going to look right down in here to the biggest zooms, the close-up. So 800 B.C., 750 B.C., 700 B.C. And now we've got in the 10 northern tribes, it's apparent which two prophets of our four are up in the north. Amos and Hosea were apparently sent by God to the northern 10 tribes. So the Ah of our Atum is right there in the north. And then it's just helpful that Isaiah and Micah, the second half of our Atum, are down in the south. So God is equally treating the 12 tribes to a prophet, with Amos pretty clearly being the first of them all. And then either Isaiah or Micah, because we really don't know how long Isaiah preached, but same four kings, you know, coming down to the end right here. These kings are Uzziah, who is also called Azariah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. And while the other kings of the north are mentioned by some of these prophets, I limited our quotes a moment ago just to the four kings there in the south. Here in 701, actually, is when Sennacherib besieges Jerusalem. We read about that in Isaiah's prophecy. Talked about that quite a bit. And then Sennacherib, of course, is defeated. We'll see that again tonight. And then Hezekiah will pass away, and Manasseh, his son, will take over. So all of this is in what century B.C.? 8th century B.C. is the 700s. And so I did, Micah may have gone a little bit, you know, maybe as far as 686, that'd be 14 years into the 7th century, but it's pretty apparent that they certainly were in that 8th century, all four of them, and perhaps the last two might have made it a little bit into the seventh. So for the rest of the night tonight, you open your Bibles, no more charts. All we're going to do is read selections from 2 Chronicles 26 through 32. When we went through Isaiah, chapters 36 through 39 are pure history. There's not really a prophecy in there at all, except as regards Hezekiah specifically, and giving extra life and all that. But 2 Chronicles 26 through 32 now is what I chose for this evening, precisely because we've had occasion to be referencing in Isaiah 2 Kings. We've had some bits and pieces of this history. Before we get into our minor prophets and or our next major prophet, whatever the case may be after I'm done with Amos' 9 chapters, we're still going to be dealing with this time frame for the next few weeks, and then we may remain in it or we may skip beyond it. So I'm just going to go ahead and turn the screen off. And as I said, we're not going to read all these chapters, but I would like to read major sections of them. So we just, once again, hopefully, drawing Isaiah in, we've looked at these charts and considered all these timelines. We just want to do the best we can in really grasping the significance of this awesome century, the 8th century B.C., in which God really felt that there needed to be some serious prophesying, and during which, of course, the northern 10 tribes would go into captivity. There'd be several invasions from Assyria. Really, really busy times. So we're going to begin now with 2 Chronicles chapter 26 and read to start verses 1 through 11. All the people of Judah took Uzziah, who was 16 years old, and made him king in the place of his father Amaziah. He built Eloth and restored it to Judah after the king slept with his father, so after his dad died. Uzziah was 16 years old when he became king. And he reigned 52 years, which makes him the second longest reign in all of Israel or Judah's history. He reigned 52 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Jechaliah of Jerusalem. He did right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father Amaziah had done, and he continued to seek God in the days of Zechariah. Please note, Zechariah. Where do you know that name from? We have a minor prophet whose book is really big, bigger than Daniel's, oral limitations. But that book of Zechariah was not written by this man. So it might be wise for you to make a note. It's all the wrong time frame. It's not the same man. Zechariah is a fairly common name. And so just make sure you recognize that in this case, in the fifth verse of 2 Chronicles 26, that Zechariah is not the Zechariah who wrote one of the minor prophets' books. He continued to seek God in the days of Zechariah, who had understanding through the vision of God. As long as he sought the Lord, God prospered him. Now, that he, of course, is Uzziah. Uzziah is the one who is prospered. But this man that had understanding through the vision of God, this Zechariah, is he a prophet? Is he a literary prophet? No, I just told you no. But then what must he be? He's an oral prophet. We have two prophets named Zechariah. One wrote a huge book. The other wrote no book whatsoever. In verse 6, he went out, and that is Uzziah, went out and warred against the Philistines and broke down the wall of Gath, which is one of the five Philistine cities, and the wall of Jabna and the wall of Ashdod, and he built cities in Ashdod among the Philistines. God helped him against the Philistines and against the Arabians who lived in Gurbaal and the Munites. The Ammonites also gave tribute to Uzziah, and his fame extended to the border of Egypt. Now he became very strong. Moreover, Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem at the corner gate, at the valley gate, at the corner buttress, and he fortified them, and he built towers in the wilderness, and huge many cisterns, for he had much livestock, both in the lowland and in the plain. Plowmen and vine dressers in the hill country and the fertile fields, for he loved the soil. Moreover, Uzziah had an army ready for battle, which entered combat by divisions, according to the number of their muster, prepared by Jael the scribe and Maaseiah the official, under the direction of Hananiah, one of the king's officers, and total number of their valiant warriors, 2,600, and we're going to skip, over the numbers there. But in these first 11 verses, we have Uzziah becoming king at what age? How long does he reign? How old is he when he dies? 68 years old, then when he dies. Now, what is the reign of Uzziah? What are the years when he started and when he ended? Brother, one of the additional reasons we have so much trouble nailing down when these kings reign. In the United States and most other countries, but it's just take the United States now, when we have a president, how many presidents do we have? Doesn't Donald Trump have a son named Barron, I think? Is Barron the co-president? No. But back in the days of these kings, that was extremely common. These are dynasties, generation after generation of kings handing the throne down to their sons. We get very long strings of this taking place. We're looking at one of them right now. And so, any good father, what he's going to do is send his kid to grade school, then to high school, give him a little bit of college, but he'll never take a business administration course. He'll probably study, how to paint paintings. And then one day, dad'll die, and everybody will walk over and say, hey, you're a king. And the poor kid will come in, and what do they know about being a king? Who would do that anyway? So in those old days, you have what we refer to as a co-regency. What is dad actually doing with his son?
Training him.
He is training him. He is grooming him. He is giving him increasing amounts of authority. And the people would begin to think of both the father and the son as jointly ruling. So sometimes as we're looking at these references, it's hard to tell. Are we talking about just the period of time when daddy has now died and he is the sole ruler before he has a son that starts to rule with him? Or are we talking about when he began as a co-ruler, which is during his daddy's time, and we're going to include the time that he's co-ruling with his son? You see how flexible all that is. Whether he's a co-ruler or a sole ruler, is he a ruler? Sure he is. So the scriptures say that he's reigning. So we know the general time frame, but only that. So, it might have been as early as 791 B.C. That would get us almost to the 9th century B.C. And then a lot of the way perhaps down to 739. But we do not know. You just can't know. Now, with that, Uzziah in let's skip down to verse 15. We're going to read verse 15 of chapter 26 to the end of the chapter now. In Jerusalem he made engines of war invented by skillful men to be on the towers and on the corners for the purpose of shooting arrows and great stones. Hence his fame spread afar, for he was marvelously helped until he was strong. But when he became strong, his heart was so proud that he acted corruptly, and he was unfaithful to Yahweh his God. For he entered the temple of Yahweh to burn incense on the altar of incense. And then Azariah the priest, now bear in mind, that's also Uzziah's other name, but this is now a priest and not the king, entered after him and with him 80 priests of Yahweh, valiant men. And they opposed Uzziah the king and said to him, it is not for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to Yahweh, but for the priests, the sons of Aaron, who are consecrated to burn incense. Get out of the sanctuary, for you have been unfaithful and will have no honor from Yahweh God. But Uzziah, with a censer in his hand for burning incense, was enraged. While he was enraged with the priests, the leprosy broke out on his forehead before the priests in the house of Yahweh beside the altar of incense. And Azariah, the chief priest, and all the priests looked at him, and behold, he was leprous on his forehead. They hurried him out of there, and he himself also hastened to get out, because Yahweh had smitten him. And King Uzziah was a leper to the day of his death. He lived in a separate house being a leper, for he was cut off from the house of Yahweh. And Jotham, his son, was over the king's house judging the people of the land. What did you just notice about his son Jotham? What's he doing? He's judging. Is daddy still alive? Yes, he is. What do we have? A co-regency. So in 22, when you become a leper, does that mean you can't talk anymore? Does it mean you can't think anymore? What does it mean if you become a leper? What can you not do anymore? You can't go anywhere. You can't be in anybody's presence. You have to be quarantined. But could he tell his son what he wanted done? Sure. And could the boy decide not to do it? All kinds of intrigue could take place. But in this case, they apparently loved each other and loved the Lord as well. And so co-regency went well. And in 22, the rest of the acts of Uzziah, first to last, prophet Isaiah, son of Amos, has written. So Uzziah slept with his fathers. They buried him with his fathers in the field of the grave which belonged to the kings, for they said he is a leper. And Jotham, his son, became king in his place. So he died in the field, was buried in the field of the grave, whereas apparently there had been, since King David, a separate place for the glory and honor of the kings down there in the city of David or immediately adjacent to it. I may have seen some of those caves myself, we're not sure if those were actual burial caves or what, but very interesting caves. I've spent some time looking into. They're not extremely deep. They may have been burial caves in times gone by. Now, in 22 again, the rest of the Acts of Uzziah, first to last, who wrote? Isaiah, the son of Amos, has written. Did he write all of that in the book we call Isaiah? No. He didn't write hardly any of it. Isaiah must have then what? Written another book. A book of history. And what did God decide about that book of history? We don't need it. We've got Kings. We've got Chronicles. We do have some information, but not much. So, the literary prophets. When you see a prophet's book, is that necessarily the only book he ever wrote? Well, no. Here's proof positive. Isaiah wrote some other things. Now then, chapter 27, the first 9 verses is also what? All the verses. It's the whole chapter. But Jotham here is not mentioned at such great length. So we'll just read the whole thing. So his son Jotham was 25 years old and he became king. And he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. So he reigned for what ages? Age 25 until he was 41. Well, poor guy didn't live very long, then did he? His mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok. He did right in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father Uzziah had done. However, he did not enter the temple of the Lord. Which is to say, he didn't do what Uzziah did and paid the high price. But the people continued acting corruptly. Now, there's two things I wanted you to notice. Back when we were looking at verse 5 in chapter 26, it's Uzziah, continued to seek God, and as long as he sought the Lord, the end of that fifth verse, what? God prospered him. Now you look at verse 2 and 27, he did right in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father Uzziah had done. However, he did not enter the temple, so he's even better than Uzziah. But what about the people? They continued acting corruptly. So there's two things to gather. Number one, if you serve your God, what might you expect very reasonably? God will see that you prosper. He wants to reward his faithful children. But even if you do a really good job as a king, does that mean everybody's going to likewise follow your lead? No, not at all. Remember that as parents. You know, you may really have done a fine job with your kids. Somebody raised that bomber who died today. Or last night it was, whenever it was. So Austin, Texas has been all upset for quite some time. And this guy, he blew up, four that he intended, I guess, and then one accidentally, and another bomb, that they found. And so here he's killed, two people, four people? How many people did he kill? I don't know. He killed several people, injured a number of others, and then, blows himself up. Well, I've read the statement that his parents and his aunts put out today. Brother, I just feel so bad for people like that. It's not necessarily that they were the worst parents and family on the planet. They might have been great parents. But there are children who are insane. We have the word insane because that condition exists. And so they might have done the very best they could. By the way, how hard have they been trying to put Nicholas Cruz away before he shot up the high school here recently? There must have been half a dozen people who said he needs to be put away. And there were school authorities and other authorities. They wanted him arrested. They wanted him locked up. They all said he was going to do something 2 years ago. Well, is that all the parents' fault? We've also seen lots of people saying, it's all the parents' fault. We've got to get back to decent discipline. And all that. Brethren, you can't control all things. And so it's sad, but it's so. What is your job? Serve your God, faithful as you know how. What are your children's jobs? Same thing. Who gets to do it for the other? Nobody. So, he's a good guy, though. The people are not so hot, but in 27 verse 3, he built the upper gate of the house of the Lord. He built extensively the wall of Ophel. Moreover, he built cities in the hill country of Judah. He built fortresses and towers on the wooded hills. He fought also the king of the Ammonites and prevailed over them. So the Ammonites gave him during that year 100 talents of silver, 10,000 cores of wheat, 10,000 of barley. So they're all paying tribute. The Ammonites also paid him this amount in the second and in the third year. So Jotham became mighty, because he ordered his ways before Yahweh his God. What were we told in verse 5 of the preceding chapter about Uzziah? Very same thing. What are we going to do? We're going to order our ways before God. Whether the people do, whether our children do, whether anybody else does. Now verse 7, the rest of the acts of Jotham, even all his wars and his acts, behold, are written in the book of the kings of Israel and Judah. Are the two books we call Kings the only two books of Kings? No. Because again, this is all we've got here in 2 Chronicles. We don't have much more anywhere else. There must be other books God chose not to record. To preserve, let's say. So in 8, he was 25 years old and he became king. He reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. Jotham slept with his fathers. They buried him in the city of David, not out in the field. He wasn't a leper. And Ahaz, his son, became king in his place. Let's read chapter 28, whole chapter. I've got to kick it up here, so we'll just go straight through it. Ahaz was 20 years old and he became king, and he reigned for 16 years in Jerusalem, same length of time that Jotham did, his father. He did not do right beside the Lord as David, his father, but he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. He also made molten images for the Baals. Moreover, he burned incense in the valley of Ben-Hinnom. What is the valley of Ben-Hinnom? It's the other name for Gehenna. That's Gehenna. There's several different words. Topheth is another one that's used for the same valley. It's on the west side of Jerusalem, immediately below the city's walls, and it bends around Mount Zion. It flows to the south and then turns 90 degrees and goes along the south edge of Jerusalem, dumps into the Kidron. I've walked it a couple of times. And so, this is the Valley of Ben-Hinnom. What's it known for? Well, he burned incense there. He burned his sons in the fire. It means he killed them according to the abomination of the nations whom Yahweh had driven out before the sons of Israel. He sacrificed and burned incense on the high places, on the hills, and under every green tree. Wherefore Yahweh his God delivered him into the hand of the king of Aram. They defeated him, carried away from him a great number of captives, brought him to Damascus, and he was also delivered into the hand of the king of Israel, who inflicted him with heavy casualties. For Pekah, son of Remaliah, slew in Judah 120,000 in one day. All valiant men, because they had forsaken Yahweh, God of their fathers. And Zichri, a mighty man of Ephraim, slew Amasiah, the king's son, and Azrikam, the ruler of the house, and Elkanah, second to the king. And the sons of Israel carried away captive of their brethren 200,000 women. My apologies, brethren. I knew it was going to be rough tonight. Yesterday I had an endoscopy. They put a camera in my throat, 18 inches deep, all the way down my esophagus and into my stomach and to the first beginnings of my colon. to explore what was going on, you know, with my reflux disease and all of that. And, oh, I had a sore throat yesterday. It was bad, and I'm struggling now. I can really feel it. But I haven't got any reports back. I expect, you know, it'll be fairly fine, but I'm a little struggling tonight. So, 200,000 and took them off to Samaria. Verse 9. But a prophet of the Lord was there, whose name was Oded. Okay, everybody, turn to the book of Oded. Is Oded a prophet? Sure he's a prophet. What kind of prophet is he? An oral prophet. He went out to meet the army which came to Samaria and said to them, Behold, because of Yahweh, the God of your fathers, was angry with Judah, he has delivered them into your hand, and you've slain them in a rage which has even reached heaven. And now you're proposing to subjugate for yourselves the people of Judah and Jerusalem for male and female slaves. Surely, do you not have transgressions of your own against Yahweh your God? Now therefore listen to me, and return the captives whom you captured from your brothers, for the burning anger of Yahweh is against you. And we could skip now, because to their credit, they said, you know, he's right. And they let him go home. Skip to 16. At that time, King Ahaz sent to the kings of Assyria for help. How's God going to feel about that? Again, the Edomites had come and attacked Judah and carried away captives. And the Philistines also invaded the cities of the lowland, the Negev, taken Beth Shemesh, Ajalon, Gederoth, Soko with its villages. I've been to Soko, by the way. Timnah with its villages, and Gimzo with its villages, and they settled there. For Yahweh humbled Judah because of Ahaz, king of Israel, for he had brought about a lack of restraint, and Judah was very unfaithful to the Lord. Who's suffering because of the unfaithfulness of Ahaz? Whole nation's suffering. Are they all guilty of equal crimes? Well, not necessarily. But when Uzziah went into the temple, what did 80 of his priests do? Quote, what did they say? Get out of here. They stood up. Doesn't sound like these guys did. You get your throat cut. Uzziah was enraged, but they stood up. Now, does that mean that everybody's evil? I don't know. But when you've got a bad king, everybody pays for it. That's the way it's always been. So, 19, the Lord humbled Judah because of Ahaz, king of Israel, for he had brought about a lack of restraint in Judah and was very unfaithful to the Lord. So, here's a different king of Assyria, not this Sennacherib we learned about from Isaiah, Tilgath-Pilneser, king of Assyria, came against him and afflicted him, and instead of strengthening him, and Ahaz took a portion of the house of the Lord and out of the palace of the king and gave it to the king of Assyria. So again, I don't need to read it all. What do you get out of Ahaz? Bad dude. So, let's go to verse 24. Moreover, when Ahaz gathered together the utensils of the house of God, he cut the utensils of the house of God in pieces. He closed the doors of the house of the Lord, made altars for himself in every corner of Jerusalem. In every city of Judah, he made high places to burn incense to other gods, and provoked Yahweh, the God of his fathers, to anger. And the rest of his acts in all its ways, first to last, behold, they're written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. Do we even have such books? Once again, no. Do we need these books? No. Does the Bible tell you here, effectively, that they weren't preserved? Yes. So the next time somebody's saying, oh, what about the lost books? You say, what lost books? You know, the lost books are what lost books are those? Well, you know, here's a mention of some. Okay, what was in them that we need? You don't know. Why are you telling me I can't trust my Bible if you have not a clue how much is missing or what's in it? Why would you trust what you don't know over that which God in his sovereign power preserved all these centuries? It's just the silliest thing when people go talking about the lost books of the Bible. It's ridiculous, really. So, just stand up, hold your ground, say, wait a cotton picking minute, you know? Don't you trust God just enough that he'll give us what we need? Now, why those people needed it, and we don't, is probably why. Give me a good reason why they would have a lot more books in that time frame than we have now from that time frame. Because we don't. live in that time frame. And those people were what? Really wicked. So what did they need? A whole lot of preaching and teaching on how to straighten up. Do we now need all the preaching and teaching they got, seeing especially they didn't even straighten up? No. The prophets did their job. Does a literary prophet have to record everything he ever preached? No, because a literary prophet can also be an oral prophet. But an oral prophet, could he be a literary prophet? Trick question. Could he have written a book that God chose not to preserve? Well, yes, that'd make him a literary prophet, just not one in the collection that we call the Bible. Okay, so Ahaz slept with his fathers. They buried him in the city in Jerusalem, but they did not bring him into the tombs of the kings of Israel, and Hezekiah's son reigned in his place. There's a reason for that. Not so specifically stated, I suppose, but we're about to find out in the first 10 verses of chapter 29. Hezekiah became king when he was 25 years old, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. So from age 25 to age
59.
Is that a calculator, or are you cheating there? He's figured it. 54. So the age, that's fairly young. The mother's name was Abijah, daughter of Zechariah. That's not the prophet. Verse 2, and he did right beside the Lord according to all that his father David had done. In the first year of his reign, in the first month, he opened the doors of the house of Yahweh and repaired them. And he brought in the priests and the Levites and gathered them into the square on the east. And he said to them, listen to me, O Levites, consecrate yourselves now. Consecrate the house of Yahweh, the God of your fathers. Carry the uncleanness out from the holy place. For our fathers. Well, it's plural. How many fathers did he have? Just one. What was his name? Yeah. And what was he responsible for? 16 years of pure what? Idolatry and evil. Every one of those 16 years were the ages 9 to 25 for Hezekiah. So Hezekiah, from the age of 9 to 25, was watching his father destroy Israel. And that boy figured it out. I'm pretty sure Ahaz was no kind of a good daddy. Can you have a really bad father and turn out great? Hezekiah is just doing it right before our eyes. Verse 6, he said, our fathers have been unfaithful and done evil in the sight of the Lord our God and forsaken him and turned their faces away from the dwelling place of Yahweh and turned their back. They've also shut the doors of the porch and put out the lamps and not burned incense or offered burnt offerings in the holy place to the God of Israel. Therefore, the wrath of Yahweh was against Judah and Jerusalem, and he's made them an object of terror, of horror, and of hissing, as you see with your own eyes. For behold, our fathers. Now, that's going to include his daddy, but what is Hezekiah saying? Our daddies. They didn't do right. And I'm going to right now. Our fathers have fallen by the sword. Our sons and daughters, our wives, are in captivity. For what? For this. They suffered the consequences because our fathers sinned. Now, it's in my heart to make a covenant with Yahweh, God of Israel, that his burning anger may turn away from us, my sons. Do not be negligent now, for Yahweh has chosen you to stand before him, to minister to him, to be his ministers, and burn incense. And in verse 12 and following, what immediately they all do. That's exactly what he called them to do. Look at verses 15 through 17. They assembled their brothers, consecrated themselves, went in to cleanse the house of the Lord according to the commandment of the king by the words of the Lord. Priests went into the inner part of the house of Yahweh and cleansed it. Every unclean thing which they found in the temple of the Lord they brought out to the court of the house of the Lord. The Levites received it to carry out to the Kidron Valley. They began the consecration on the first day of the first month. On the eighth day of the month they entered the porch of the Lord. They consecrated the house of the Lord in 8 days and finished on the 16th day of the first month. How busy were they about their business? Oh, that's a tribute. In an instant, we get a new king. And in an instant, what does he do? He said, this whole nation is as wrong as it can get. That includes my daddy. It includes all of your daddies. And it's in my heart to fix it. Tell you what, let's start today. And they took care of business. Skip down to 32. The number of the burnt offerings when they consecrate that house, which the assembly brought, was 70 bulls, 100 rams, and 200 lambs, and all these were for a burnt offering to the Lord. That's what the people brought. And the consecrated things altogether now were 600 bulls and 3,000 sheep. But the priests were too few. They were unable to skin all the burnt offerings. Therefore, their brothers the Levites helped them until the work was completed, and until the other priests had consecrated themselves. So the Levites were more conscientious to concentrate themselves than the priests. There were also many burnt offerings with the fat of the peace offerings, the libations for the burnt offerings. Thus the service of the house of Yahweh was established. Then Hezekiah and all the people rejoiced over what God had prepared for the people, because the thing had come about what? Well, I guess. It was just an explosion. Typically when you have an explosion, what's left behind? Big mess. And this one, what was left behind? Consecrated purity of the house of God that was fully functioning. Didn't take them but a couple of weeks. Now, chapter 30, verses 1 through 12. Hezekiah sent to all Israel and Judah, wrote letters also to Ephraim and Manasseh that they should come to the house of the Lord at Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover to the Lord God of Israel. Now, I'm not going to read the rest. It's verses 1 through 12 that tells the story. Think about this for a minute. What's been going on for the last 16 years? Bad king in the south. What's been going on up in the north? Be careful. Assyria's already come. Assyria's come and gone. Okay? So what? About the 10 tribes. Bits and pieces of them left. And what does Hezekiah do? So look, I know we've been a divided kingdom all these years. I know we fought. I know all of that. But you guys have been hooked upon. Why don't y'all come home? What a guy. Let's serve Yahweh together. Let's put the nation back together. Did they agree? No. Did some? Yes. But apparently not very many. So it's sad. He made the effort. Good for him. Get over all the hard feelings and everything. Let's repair. Come on down. Let's worship in Jerusalem together. But the majority refused. Skip to verse 21 in chapter 30. Sons of Israel present in Jerusalem celebrated the Feast of Unleavened Bread for 7 days with great joy. And the Levites and the priests praised the Lord day after day with loud instruments to Yahweh. Hezekiah spoke encouragingly to all the Levites, who showed good insight in the things of Yahweh. So they ate for the appointed 7 days, sacrificing peace offerings and giving thanks to the Lord God their fathers. Then the whole assembly decided what? Let's do it again. Okay. Say another 7 days. Did Hezekiah inspire these people? Hezekiah's example just set them on fire. Serve God. So they went 14 days. And in 24, Hezekiah, king of Judah, contributed to the assembly 1,000 bulls and 7,000 sheep. The princes contributed to the assembly 1,000 bulls and 10,000 sheep. A large number of the priests. Is it good times? It's good times. 31, 1 and 2. When all this was finished, all Israel who were present went out to the cities of Judah, broke the pillars in pieces, cut down the Asherim, pulled down the high places and the altars throughout all Judah and Benjamin, as well as in Ephraim and Manasseh, tribes to the north that would join to Israel and on the eastern side of the Jordan, till they destroyed them all. And all the sons of Israel returned to their cities, each to his possession. That is, the ones that came down and decided that, you know, they'd agree. And Hezekiah appointed the divisions of the priests, and the Levites by their divisions, each according to his service. The priests, the Levites, burnt offerings, peace offerings, minister and give thanks and praise in the gates of the camp of the Lord. That guy not only cleaned house, but he set the house in order. 32, last chapter. After these acts of faithfulness, Sennacherib, king of Syria, came and invaded Judah, besieged the fortified cities, and thought to break into them for himself. When Hezekiah saw Sennacherib had come, he intended to make war on Jerusalem. He decided with his officers and warriors to cut off the supply of water from the springs outside the city. So they went to work fortifying the city. Now, we don't have to read this, because in Isaiah chapters 36, 37, 38, and 39, we have in far greater detail what takes place here in this chapter. So we've read that already in chapters 36 through 39. If you want to make a note in the margin, chapter 32 of 2 Chronicles is the same time frame as Isaiah 36 through 39 and 2 Kings 18 verse 13 through chapter 20 verse 9. In both 2 Kings and Isaiah, in this case, there is a great deal more information than what we have in this 32nd chapter. So we'll close out our class in the last 60 seconds with verses 20 through 26 here in Isaiah 32, or excuse me, 2 Chronicles 32, verse 20. King Hezekiah and Isaiah the prophet, son of Amos, prayed about this and cried out to heaven. The Lord sent an angel who destroyed every mighty warrior, commander, and officer in the camp of the king of Assyria. So he returned in shame to his own land. And when he had entered the temple of his God, some of his own children killed him there with the sword. Now bear in mind, the event starts in verse 21 at 701 B.C. 701 B.C. So 20 years after the fall of the 10 northern tribes. But his children won't kill him for another 20 years. So he went home in shame. They did kill him, but it would be 20 years later. So the Lord saved Hezekiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem from the hand of Sennacherib, king of Assyria, from the hand of all, guided them on every side. Many were bringing gifts to Yahweh at Jerusalem, choice presents to Hezekiah, king of Judah. He was exalted in the sight of all nations thereafter. In those days, Hezekiah became mortally ill. Prayed to the Lord. Lord spoke to him, gave him a sign. Hezekiah gave no return for the benefit he received because his heart was proud. Therefore, wrath came on him and on Judah and Jerusalem. Pray for good leaders, brethren. When you don't have them, we'll all pay the price. However, Hezekiah humbled the pride of his heart, both he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord did not come on them in the days of Hezekiah. Now, you know, pardon me for a few more verses, but let's close with 29 through 33. He made cities for himself, acquired flocks and herds in abundance. God had given him very great wealth. It was Hezekiah who stopped the upper outlet of the waters of the Gihon and directed them to the west side of the city of David. And Hezekiah prospered in all that he did. What do we call that? Hezekiah's tunnel. I've seen those fortifications. I've walked through that tunnel. One of the great engineering marvels on earth, and they still don't know how he did it. 31. Even in the matter of the envoys of the rulers of Babylon, which Isaiah tells us about, who sent to him to inquire the wonder that had happened in the land, God left him only to test him, that he might know all that was in his heart. The rest of the acts of Hezekiah and his deeds of devotion, behold, they're written in the vision of Isaiah the prophet. We do have more in Isaiah on this issue. Son of Amos, and in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. So Hezekiah slept with his fathers, buried him in the upper section of the tombs of the sons of David. It sounds like, brethren, there were three sections. There's a field where you're a king, but you don't deserve to be there in the royal tombs. Then you can be in the lower portion of the tombs, or you can be in the upper portion of the tombs. Where does Hezekiah rightly belong? In the upper tombs of the kings. There are the sons of David, and all Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem honored him at his death. And his son Manasseh became king in his place. And if you know Manasseh, he would prove to be the what? The longest lived king of all the tribes. And one of the absolutely worst. Between him and Ahab, it's a dead heat. Next week.